Welcome to the KPMG Financial Reporting Podcast Series, delivering fresh insights and perspectives around major accounting and financial reporting developments across a range of timely topics. We thank you for joining today.
Hello, I'm John Barbagallo, a Managing Director at KPMG, and welcome to another installment in our podcast series on the new Inflation Reduction and CHIPS Act. In today's episode, I have the pleasure of continuing our conversation on a new option for companies to monetize certain credits under the acts with two of my colleagues from KPMG, Ashby Corum, a partner with Washington National Tax, and Angie Storm, a partner in our Department of Professional Practice. Ashby and Angie have been closely monitoring this legislation, and I want to thank them today for joining us and sharing their insights on the new laws. So, Ashby, for the first time at the federal level, certain tax credits are transferable. What does that mean for our taxpayers?
Thanks, John. What it really means is, as the name implies, that they can be transferred. So what it provides is the ability to sell a tax credit to an unrelated taxpayer in exchange for cash. So within the Act, there is a list of several credits, but there's a list that are eligible to be transferred. Those that are eligible to be transferred are able to be transferred once, but you just transfer it once for cash, and then you've been able to monetize that credit.
Yeah, thanks, Ashby. Interesting. So what are your thoughts on the marketability of these credits, since transferring these credits is new at the federal level and you can only transfer them once?
Well, since you can only transfer them once, you won't necessarily see someone that steps in as both a buyer and seller. You won't see someone step in and kind of trade the credits. But presumably, there'll be some kind of facilitators out there that help match buyers and sellers together and to make the market, you know, work in, from that perspective. If you think about the incentive to buy the credits, and there's a presumption that they will be bought at some kind of discount, just because you have some overall risk and fees incurred in the transaction, and not to mention you may pay up front to get the cash savings a little bit later. Many companies may approach it as more of a financing standpoint or mindset, but in a second we'll note that it can influence where things show up in the income statement.
Yeah, thanks, Ashby. That makes sense. Angie, turning to you, I do want to talk about the accounting implications of selling these tax credits at a discount, but before we do, let's first talk about the accounting model for these transferable tax credits.
John, like you all mentioned, these transferable credits are of a new animal in U.S. federal tax law, but they have existed in other jurisdictions historically. We think that the accounting for transferable credits really depends on whether those credits are refundable or non-refundable. And then even after that, there might be more than one acceptable approach. So let's start with the refundable credits that are transferable. We believe that the refundability feature in these credits makes them akin to government grants. So just like a refundable credit that isn't transferable, companies will account for them like a government grant. So it, for example, analogized to IAS 20. Non-refundable transferable credits are a bit stickier, and there have been a lot of discussion across the profession on this particular pool because U.S. GAAP doesn't provide specific guidance. We did, John, discuss this issue with the FASB staff, and based on those discussions, we believe there is more than one acceptable approach. The first one, which we believe is the most appropriate, is to account for the credits under Topic 740. So just like any other non-refundable tax credit. And then in the event you sell it, the company would recognize the proceeds and the gain or loss on the sale in the tax line. So this model really respects the fact that the taxpayer that generated the credit can only monetize it with the government through a reduction of its income tax liability. A really interesting question, though, comes up when all the economics go into the tax line, because many companies that sell these credits or are expected to sell these credits are companies that wouldn't be able to use them themselves. So should a company that wouldn't be able to use the credit book a valuation allowance on it and then book a gain in the tax line when it sells it? Or should it consider the proceeds it expects to get in the sale when evaluating the need for a valuation allowance on the deferred tax asset? We feel like there are very good arguments to both of those views, so a company in that situation can apply either approach. I will tell you, in discussing application of Topic 740 to these credits, some believed that above-the-line presentation is more appropriate for the gain or loss, really because that gain or loss isn't a traditional tax expense or benefit. So we do think that that above-the-line presentation of the gain or loss is also appropriate. So stepping away from 740 for a minute, there might be other acceptable approaches besides that income tax model too. Because again, US GAAP doesn't provide specific guidance, we think it would also be acceptable for a company to account for a non-refundable transferable credit like a government grant on the basis that because the company can monetize it without having an income tax liability, it's no different from a refundable credit that we account for as a government grant. Another potential option, which is one that some have taken in the past, is a split approach whereby you account for the portion that you intend to use to offset your income tax liability under Topic 740 and the amount you intend to sell like a government grant. That approach might be acceptable too, but we'd really suggest that companies consult with their advisors and auditors before pursuing that path.
So, Angie, it sounds like the discount we discussed could end up in different places, depending on how a company actually accounts for the credit. Is that right?
That's right, John. If you're applying the straight Topic 740 model the whole way through, that discounted amount that you sold the credit for will end up in the tax line. But if you choose to apply Topic 740 only up until the sale and present the gain or loss above the line, then you'll end up with that discount reducing pre-tax income. The discount will also obviously reduce pre-tax income if a company applies a government grant model, either in whole or in part. So that would certainly encompass this discount that we're talking about. IS-20 also has a permission for companies to measure grants at the nominal amount or essentially zero, but that's applicable only under certain circumstances. But either way, that discount will find its way into the P&L some way, somehow. And then when the company sells the credit, they're going to have to figure out the appropriate accounting model to record that sale based on the facts. So that could be ASC 61020, which provides guidance on recognizing other income on the sale of non-financial assets to non-customers. It could also potentially be ASC 860, which provides guidance on transferring financial assets. So some of these credits certainly could be financial assets if they're also refundable.
Okay, one last question, Angie. What about the other side of the transaction? How does the purchaser account for the purchase of these credits at a discount?
So as Ashby told us earlier, John, the transferable credits can only be transferred once. So the purchaser of the credit is going to have to use it to offset its federal income tax liability. So that asset that it's purchasing is an income tax attribute that must be accounted for under ASC 740. So 740 actually does provide specific guidance on how to initially recognize the purchase of a tax benefit outside of a business combination. And what it requires is that the purchaser recognizes the asset at its full ASC 740 measurement. So if it's a $100 credit, the tax asset goes on at 100. And the difference between that 100 and the amount of cash that was paid gets booked as what we call a deferred credit that is amortized into income tax expense as the tax asset reverses. But to the extent that the purchaser is going to use that credit right away to offset its income tax liability, that deferred credit may fall into the P&L pretty quickly after purchase.
Great, Angie. Thank you. And Angie and Ashby, thank you so much for joining us today. I appreciate you walking us through the accounting and tax implications of these transferable credits. And I would also like to thank all of my KPMG colleagues that participated in our podcast series, as well as the ones that prepared our IRA and CHIPS legislation publication. And you can find links to our podcast and our publication on our FRV website at frv.kpmg.us. Thanks for joining us today and have a great day.
Thank you for listening to this KPMG Financial Reporting Podcast. For more in-depth financial reporting developments, analysis, and podcast episodes, please visit frv.kpmg.us and be sure to subscribe today. Also, we are social. You can also follow us on LinkedIn at KPMG Financial Reporting View or with hashtag KPMGFRV.